afternoon. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and Local Media This Week, the programme where we look at the local papers, the Clare Champion and the Clare Echo, and we see what they're talking about. Local Media This Week is sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. Ruth, based in Feakle, a brilliant photographer, and we're very grateful for her sponsorship for this programme. Delighted to welcome our, we have a full complement of our usual personnel tonight, or today, this afternoon, John S. Kelly. John, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Jim. Delighted to be here.
Pat O'Brien. Pat, good to see you.
Thanks, Jim.
David Fleming, great to see you back again, David.
Thanks, Jim. And before we go on, Jim, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there today.
Hear, hear.
Absolutely. Definitely, we wish them all the best and hope that they have a lovely day and that they're being looked after by their children.
Exactly.
Yes. I suppose we'll start as we usually do at the front page. UHL is never far from the front page. Looking at the front page of the page one of the Clare Echo, it's funny, it's not the front page because they have a sort of a wraparound advertising in the Clare Echo, but on page one, it says 28,000 plus UHL patients each year are from Clare, and that activists who are promoting, I suppose, the reopening of Ennis Emergency Department are saying that a lot of the data that's being used is being used to advise against the reopening, and that data is out of date, which seems, John, very strange that, you know, you'd expect whoever is providing data would be would make sure it's up to date, or if it's out of date, to say so.
Absolutely, Jim. And here we are discussing week after week the problems of the health centres in Limerick and in the other smaller hospitals around. And to realise that data is being sent to the decision maker, that government minister, that has been plundered.
Yes.
Okay. And what we mean by that is that data that's out of date and not relevant is being fed to the department.
To the policymakers.
To the policymaker. Hmm. Now.
There's no story on it. Is that all that's in it? That front piece.
That's all, yeah?
Hmm. Yeah.
But so you'd imagine there'd be a bit more in the story.
Yeah, a bit more detail.
Indeed, Pat. Mm. Absolutely.
But I wonder, you know, did they make a decision back 15 years ago to close Ennis? And be it the medical side of things or be it the civil service, they simply are too stubborn to go back and say they made a wrong call.
Yeah, well, I have Mary Lou McDonald was interviewed on Clare FM yesterday morning. Today Sunday, I was going out on Thursday morning, I think. And that question was put to her, would they open it? Or she said we'd have to take the advice of the medical people. She didn't give no commitment to open.
Yeah. And the advice from the medical people is that it's dangerous to open it.
Yeah. Unless and there was a doctor on as well from Lahinch. Yes. Dr. Kelleher, I think, is from the Hinge. And he said as well, he said, unless you pile a pile of money into us and put in all the top proper facilities, that it wouldn't be up to the standard to do it. Yeah.
But is Limerick up to the standard?
Well, it obviously isn't. But
well, look at Jim, I had a situation just last week and I couldn't say a word to Limerick. I thought they were fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife was taken in on Saturday evening, Friday evening, and she got the best of care, and she was in straight away, and she was up in ICU for 4 or 5 days, and I couldn't say one time. They were fantastic. Now,
but Pat, and I'm happy to hear that, because I say for the vast majority of people, they don't have that good experience, at least waiting. When they get in there, I think you get the best service that they can provide. I don't know how they're providing it when they're under so much pressure. There were, as we know, because it made national headlines, 2 days last week, elective surgeries were cancelled because there were, and this is Dan Danaher on the front page of the Clare Champion has this as well. Government has thrown in the towel on UHL is the quote from whoever's saying that quote. But there were 245 patients presenting each day at Limerick, and they simply couldn't manage them.
Well, I was in there on Monday, and I was in there this week, and you couldn't get a place to park, the place was chock-a-block with people.
Yeah.
And then I suppose after the weekend, then doctors, people turned up with doctors and the next thing the doctors send them on to Limerick and they're all, I suppose they're all arriving in on maybe in the morning, the Monday morning, the Tuesday morning, but the place was chock-a-block. Yeah. Couldn't get a place to park.
Okay, but tell me, we know now what you're saying very clearly. What about the four other hospitals that are part of
the hospital group?
Now tell me, their buildings, they're equipped, not fully, but they're equipped to do a quite an amount of emergencies. No, isn't that right? Mm. And why are the medical people not supporting the principle of using NINA?
I think it's probably less about the facilities, even though that it would be a big factor. It's more about having the number of consultants available on standby if it is an accident emergency. Now, I was listening to the radio the other day, and Limerick is a Model 4 hospital. I don't know what that means, but it is a Model 4 hospital. But every Model 4 hospital has then a Model 3 hospital below it.
Yes.
Limerick does not have a Model 3. I presume Ennis and all the others, NINA, are Model 2 or below. So that seemingly is a problem. A Model 3 hospital presumably takes the pressure off the Model 4.
Yes.
And we don't have one.
Hmm.
And why don't we have one? It's because I think you need a minimum number of consultants, a minimum number of nurses, a minimum number of beds, a minimum number of facilities. And the question to the HSE and the government is, well, why haven't we got a Model 3 hospital? Hmm.
And what are the critical elements that are required in order to cater for the numbers? What is needed?
I don't know, John.
Well, as you think about it, like, what's needed?
I would have thought you... Well, I actually don't know.
Mm-hmm. Would you put a building in as a priority? Availability of a building?
I would have thought if none of our existing hospitals...
Yes.
St. John's and NINA and Ennis and so on are ready for the Model 3 status, then we should build another hospital, probably in Limerick because it is the centre of the district.
But
Ennis is on one side of the region, in the medical region, let's call it,
David,
the hinterland. NINA is on the other side. Yeah. Limerick is more central.
But listen, I mean, while we're waiting to build... We don't even want to get into a conversation about how long it takes to build a blooming hospital here in
or what it will cost.
We have a building.
I know, but then you have to find consultants.
That's right,
and
but
doctors.
You're going to have to do that anyway.
You are. Yeah. And this week I was listening to the radio, because all of this is always being talked about.
Yeah.
Ireland has the lowest number of consultants per patient in the OECD.
Correct.
We are not training enough of them, or we're not bringing enough. By the way, a significant number of our consultants are trained overseas.
Oh, yeah.
And we are dependent. Work. Yeah, but we're now becoming very dependent on that source. And if there was something to happen overseas and these people stopped coming, we'd be in serious trouble.
Yeah.
But it takes a little bit. The government probably needs to invest more, pay more and recruit more. And keep the people that we're training.
The take-up on the new salary scale for consultants, as you saw from the media in the last week, okay, the percentage take-up is very, very high.
This is of the new public contract.
Yes.
And this hopefully will see some dividends where, you know, consultants could do private practice and public practice. The government has put money into it, to be fair to them, has put money in to keep them all in the public service.
Yeah.
But we're still not, and that, I don't think we're still seeing any benefit in Limerick.
There seems to be no end to it.
Going back to the, going back to see the big problem with the Centre of Excellence, and I was talking to my brother-in-law inside it in the hospital the other day, and he was saying, he said, when you have critical decision to make in a small hospital, you might have only one or two doctors there. But he said, in the big scheme of things, where you're in Limerick, and you can get three or four maybe opinions of consultants and doctors, and do you know that the chances of that they're making a series of a mistake
are less.
Of course. Well, you see, and that's of course why the medical people would want a big model for. Like UHL hospital, and not have the smaller hospitals available. People are, unfortunately, and we've seen it a few times, are dying. And I suspect are probably not getting as good a care as they might in a different place. Like, we don't hear the same stories about Waterford or Cork or some of the Dublin hospitals. But we are seeing in both national and local media some cases, admittedly very few, but nevertheless they're there, of people not doing so well, and one or two cases of death. And now we're seeing cancellations. Now, if you've been waiting a long time for a procedure, and in some cases we know the waiting lists are very long, you'll be very disappointed to have your operation cancelled. As it was last week on 2 days. So the system is now broken. Really broken.
They're building a new, built inside, and a huge building inside in it, as much as a 96 bed.
Do you think that will solve it?
They have plans to build another 96 bed.
But you see, I think it will help, but I think we're just chasing our tail, to use that phrase, because our population is getting older, our population is getting bigger, number one, and our population is getting older.
And they're living longer.
And they're living longer. Yes. And so those 96 beds will be eaten up like that.
Us human beings are causing an awful problem to the hospital.
And you're very costly.
I was in the early, and there was trolleys around the place, but I my head was so
of course,
bamboozled. I wasn't going around checking.
But 96 more beds, Pat, should
help.
Should reduce when they're open. 96 trolleys.
But you see, and you will remember, sometimes, of course, they may well be 96 actual physical beds there. But they may not have the nurses and the doctors to be able to open all those 96 beds.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
I was in the A&E, and I couldn't say a word to them. I thought they were fabulous, and they were very busy, and they were in great form, having a word with everyone and chatting, and we were going up in the lift, and there was a lady you mentioned, and she was in charge, I'd say, in the youngest girl, one of the nurses, and her hair tied back, and she was asking us where we were from, or where was I from, and I said I was in Clare, and that my was from Cork, and that she was living in there. Oh, she says up the banner, she says, shut up the banner.
Jim, it's a lovely...
Still on the
front page, very beautiful American visitor, probably with some bit of an Irish background from Oklahoma. And she's checking out the holy water at St. Bridget's Well in Liscannor.
Yes.
Now, we're fortunate that we have here with us a young man whose academic interest is associated with Irish wells, holy at one stage and pre-Christian at another stage. Tell me, what is it, David? We could take that one because it's such a lovely photograph, and it takes us into the story. What is it about the origin of the holy wells?
I think pre-Christian, these sites were probably... they became special in the landscape when water emerges spontaneously from the ground. I think they automatically then became special in people's eyes. And of course, when the first holy Christians came about, the holy men mostly, but in this case, Bridget, they realized the importance of them very quickly, and they became associated with Christianity very quickly as a result. In Ireland, you see, you would have had these sites all over Europe.
Is that right?
But in Ireland, they seem to have survived. And kept their sacred. If you look at that picture, you'll see all the around the woman. You'll see the little rags tied up on the branch of the trees. You'll see rosary beads. You'll see pictures.
Yes.
Which goes to show you the popular devotion. I mean, sociologists and future historians will be interested in these sort of things. The popular devotion that there is, and it's St. Bridget's. I own a holy well, John.
You do.
And there's nothing like this there. Though I was told a long, long time ago that there might have been stuff left like that there once upon a time. And I don't want to encourage
you. You know, that's what I was just going to say. You don't want to cue people down the road.
No, the cult of St. Coolin is long gone.
And we have a box outside with it. Yeah. Put a few
kindness in it. Well, exactly. Exactly.
Have you any reference historic background to your
wife? I do. It's apart from the building itself, which was built in 1803, according to the plaque above the entranceway. There is a lovely little reference to it in the 1690s when a traveller was... A person who's touring around the country calls on it, a fellow named Dinley, and he remarks that there's this holy well and that there was this enormous oak tree growing above it. And of course, the trees and wells were connected. So it's, you know, and growing up, John, in Mitchelstown in Cork, the local saint was St. Fanahan, and his cult was very big in my childhood. On the 25th of November each year, dark winter nights, you would walk down to his well. From it's located near the town, you would walk down on a double ditch, raised double ditch, you'd walk down to his holy well, and you'd do the rounds.
And was there a patron associated
with it? That was the patron day, but the patron had sort of... There were amusements in the square on the 25th, but it had been much bigger, of course, much bigger in the past. There is another picture inside... I wonder if they must be related. There's another picture on page 4, making memories, it says, and there's a woman lighting a candle also at the well in the scanner. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
we came.
And there's a smashing sight, a smashing view from both in the scanner there at the well. You can see the whole countryside.
Fabulous view. We came across a well in Killaloe recently, St. Flannan's well, and we did a little program about it. It's situated in the bank at the back of the AIB.
Is it
in private property?
So it's not accessible.
It's not. Well, it's the bank are happy to let.
The bank actually own it.
They do.
Right.
They own the property, but and there's a sheen and a gig beside it.
Headless. When you think about Jim, when you think about Holy Island and Inishkaltra, it in the 18th century drew huge crowds across to the island.
Yeah,
and there's a well there too.
That's right. Mm. And the Irish are always good to enjoy themselves.
Mm. Well, so, you see, this...
done by all accounts, trying going to the well about.
But quite right, Pat. You're dead on. And you know the bishop put an end to it.
But you see, this was it. Because they were so popular, and because people were getting up to things maybe that they shouldn't be getting up to, the church cracked down on it.
Yes.
But of course, the church wasn't very successful in all of this, because, as we know, in several parts of the country and in County Clare, as this is evidence of, the wells continue to be popular sites of devotion.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Indeed.
Okay, listen, we'll move on because time is moving. I'm looking at page 2 of the Clare Echo today, and Pádraic McMahon has a story there. The book launch hears calls to end shocking discrimination. And I suppose that even in the first paragraph, a new book co-produced by the Clare Leader Forum has delved into the dark reality of neglect, abuse and deprivation of liberty faced by disabled people in Ireland. And that's a damning sentence in relation to how disabled people in the country are treated. Pat, you attended.
Yeah, it's just part of the book of the Illis Book Club launch, and we recorded what went on, I think, to about an hour and a half, and I had a chat with Dermot Hayes as well, who was a great activist for disabled people in Clare. Yeah, it was very good. There was a fine crowd. The main hall inside in the Temple Gate was full up with people. And it was very good. There was various people that wrote paragraphs in the book. They give out their bit on the stage. And there was various people from the disabled people of Clare at it. You know, all the people around. And David Fitzgerald actually launched the book, but he wasn't there. And he done it by Zoom. And it was a great day for him and for the disabled people of Clare.
Tell me, Pat, do you think that we as an Irish community look after disadvantaged people as we should?
I don't think we do. No, John. No, we don't. And we don't provide enough facilities or anything like that.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to raise the hackle on people at all.
I don't, and it should really.
Yeah. No, and I think because this is why it's such a shocking headline when we see it. I think we take things for granted too much.
Yeah.
And because we don't experience it ourselves, it just doesn't occur to us. Yeah. I think sometimes. But if you're living with somebody or you have a relative who is disabled, then you probably do take a little bit of notice. It says here, Anne-Marie Flanagan, who's pictured, was critical of politicians during her address. She said, the hidden discrimination, so it's not visible, the hidden discrimination we have to live with every day is shocking. And we have to do it, and we have to do something about it, she said. She added, TDs and senators don't actually give a damn. They just take the script. And that's very sad to read.
But why should we leave it, indeed, to the TDs or the
Well, I suppose senators. We expect our TDs and senators to represent everybody. And if people like Anne-Marie Flanagan and Martin Tobin and others are looking for supports, you'd hope that the RTDs and senators are doing something about it, but she obviously feels that they just take the script, as she says, and read it, but actually don't do very much about it. Mm.
Take for instance, there's three parking places, wheelchair parking spaces in Cusick Park at the back of Aldi. Now I was at the two semi-finals of the championship last year and the county final of the hurling. And I walked in along the road behind the terrace there at the Aldi end and over to the far side. And on the way in and out, I was viewing where the parking spaces were. Mm. And you know what they were full of? Wheelie bins.
Yeah. What?
There was wheelie bins.
Wheelie bins.
Oh. And where the three parking spaces for the disabled parking. All the wheelie bins of Cusick Park were parked there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suppose also at matches particularly, but other times you'd see it where, we can all be responsible at times, where cars are parked with two wheels up on the footpath.
Yes.
So there might be room for a pedestrian to squeeze by, but there certainly wouldn't be room for a wheelchair user to travel on that path.
And just another thing on the matches, there was a big debate about this on Joe Duffy there last year, And this man from Waterford came on, and Waterford were playing Tipperary in a minor. Now, this is a minor game, where there was maybe the maximum would be 4,000 or 5,000 people inside in the stadium. They'd take 5,000. But he came up to the back, told us the old stand would take him up from Waterford, and he parked there on a reach. And he went up to the gate, his wheeling him in along. He was after getting out of his car and getting out of his wheelchair and getting into it. And he went up to the gate. And the fellow at the gate wouldn't let him in, simply because the wheelchair area was over at the far side of the ground. So your man said to him, sure, he said, there's only a few thousand people here, so why can't you open the gate and let me in and let me go down there? I won't be. No, he just wouldn't let him in. And he had to go back to his car and get off the gate back in again and drive around to the other side to get into where the designation place was.
Yes.
A young man's match.
It's amazing, really.
Mind you, a man in charge of a gate can be very, very thick.
and the fellows that get those jobs are fairly thick.
Some of them are, maybe. Okay, we...
But by the way, it's a serious question.
It is a serious question.
The way
question,
we ignore, as a society, the needs of those who are disadvantaged.
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't it?
This year is, yeah.
So you're coming up to election time now.
But I suppose if there are rules, and I'm sure there are rules and regulations, but they need to be enforced as well.
Yeah.
You know, we need to...
Yeah. If we had you last week, Jim, we would have been talking to you about that letter that 14 of you sent to the Minister for Education.
Yes, well, I wasn't one of the people who wrote it now, but...
God, I thought you were, actually. Yeah. But we'll come to it another day.
We'll come to it. I think that campaign will be going on for a good while.
I think it will.
Media not helping Ennis reputation. Now, we're the media, David.
We're not exactly the media.
Yeah. It's page six of the
Clare Echo. We talk about the media, but we are mediating the story, so maybe we are the media. And there's nobody attached to it. But we presume it might be Porrig or somebody.
Yes.
Local media in Clare are not helping Ennis's reputation by putting out a negative picture about the county town. A senior official in Clare County, it is Porrig McMahon, County Council has said, writes Porrig McMahon. In a surprising contribution at Tuesday's meeting of the Ennis Municipal District, senior executive officer Sean Lenehan took aim at the local media. And of course, he's taking aim there at Porrig and all his other colleagues. Sometimes the negative gets out more from the media, the Milltown Malby native remarked when airing his disappointment with ongoing coverage of the county town. He confirmed the council would be carrying a 2-page advert in the Clare Champion this week to try assist with messaging on the ongoing works in the town centre, which has greatly impacted on businesses and mobility. We're here and available to meet with Clare FM when they want a speaker. I've never refused Clare FM an interview when they put it to me, he added. So he's got to be in his bonnet all right.
Jim, talk about a biased observation of the situation. It's unbelievable. The media to ignore a prominent radio like Scarf Bay Community Radio, which covers half the county, the whole county.
Yes, the whole county in this program.
And we are very, very fair in our reflecting of people's attitude towards the project in Ennis, aren't we?
We are indeed, and we always we have great praise for Ennis.
Well, it's there on page 5 as well, Jim. Councillors call for PR job around Ennis Works.
Yeah. Well, I was in Ennis during the week, and they have a number of boards up with really nice pictures of, let's say, the finished product in Ennis and what it will look like.
Yes.
And it's a lovely, attractive feature. But, I mean, they should maybe say, in relation to that, what the end product is going to be like.
Now, Jim, hold it there, Pat.
On page 12,
all those nice images that Jim was talking about. Isn't Sean Lenehan somewhat correct, because we have Pat O'Brien here every single week giving out about these Pats and that they're not needed And wouldn't it be better that the money be spent elsewhere? Isn't Sean Linehan right, actually, Jim?
Well, I suppose Pat would have a point as well. I mean, I know Pat has been talking about, you know, it's not that long ago since they were done, yeah, and they're being dug up again.
But sure, isn't that very negative?
But the, wait a minute now, wait a minute. The councillor is saying...
You're going to end up with one...
The councillor is saying they will not be dug up a second time. And is responding to the...
Not for a couple of years, I'd say.
No. That would be... That's a very biased...
But there's a difference, there's a big difference between constructive criticism, which, and I'm defending Pat, constructive criticism and negativity. They're totally different things.
Yeah.
Negativity is kind of totally negative.
And now, where is that relevant to this?
Well, Pat's criticism is constructive. That if they were...
Is it Pat...
you see, it's the same Limerick. I was in Limerick the other day, and I had to click my son down at Arthur's Quay.
Are you ever at
home? We go out to the hospital. But there's only one lane now of you can only go up O'Connell Street in Limerick.
Yes.
There's only one lane of traffic of cars, and the one beside you is a bus lane, and then there's the width of the room here at both sides in footpaths, which is nice and wide.
And tell me, Pat, a fair observation on that. What is wrong with it?
Well, it doesn't end a lot wrong with it, but I don't know if you want to get people into the city. You know, you have to park somewhere.
Yes.
You know, I know maybe there's a bus around the city, there's a bus around Limerick City and all that. But
Is there a hop on, hop off?
And what about the people from the country, like?
Huh?
Yeah. What about the people from the country?
Unless they develop a park and ride facility on the edge of town.
But what's wrong with the idea of a hop on and hop off?
Maybe.
That particular bus, you may only be going one stop.
You'll be paying every time you hop on.
No.
I think...
If we're living in a city, John, if we're living in... Well, for people living out of the country, you have to find out where this bus is going to and where it's coming from. I was talking to a woman beside me, a neighbour of mine, the other day, and she decided to go in the bus into Limerick, and she was going on a trip from Northern Dublin, and she went down the train, went in the bus, on the train, and up to Dublin, back down, and this bus was leaving, and she was back down again, and she just headed off, came off the train, down to Arthur's Quay, and there the bus was heading out the road.
Yes.
So she had to go and phone her nephew to collect her. Yeah.
Listen, we'll finish there for the first half of the show. Pat, have you something to play us out with?
We go to Elkie Brooks, Pearls the Singer.
Oh, lovely. I haven't heard that for a while. Pearls the Singer, Elkie Brooks.
Pearls the Singer, she stands up when she plays the piano.
You're very welcome back. You're listening to Local Media This Week on Scariff Bay Community Radio, programme sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. And there we enjoyed Elkie Brooks and Pearls the Singer. Lovely choice, Pat. I suppose we were looking at the Clare Champion there during the break, and there's a feature, I think, on page 19 of the Clare Champion on Ash Dyback. And I suppose Ash Dyback is getting to be, you know, a very, very serious issue. Mm. I mean, we can see it driving around the country. Ash trees are, you know, losing their leaves. They're prone to branches to fall off in wind. So there's a certain amount of, it's dangerous to a certain degree.
Huge loss of income or money for farmers who actually,
invested.
There's 24,000 acres, John.
How much?
24,000 acres of ash dieback.
In Clare?
Well, I'd say in the country, probably. They're rotting into the ground, covered with brambles that have rotten ash sticks with ivy around them. For 4 years, they have been dodging to do anything with this issue. In those 4 years, 100 million of crop has rotted into the ground. the longer the leave is, the harder it will be to clear it out, he warned. That was, let's see who's talking there now, Richard Pilkington, who is involved in the Clare IFA.
And I was reading as well that you need a felling licence to knock down dead ash trees.
Robert, yes, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And is there a compensation package from the state for farmers?
Yeah, they got money to plant it, John, but I don't think they're trying to get some kind of a package now to clear it.
Yeah.
But you have to get this licence, felling licence, to clear out. And we know a lot about the difficulty in getting...
By the way, we mentioned last week the arrival of a new beetle. You didn't come across it, did you?
Yeah, I see that about it down in Cracklow.
Is it mentioned in the paper there, Pat?
Well, it was there a couple of weeks ago. Down in Cracklow, yeah.
Is it...
Pine.
Mm.
Well, that would be a worry.
It's a
serious,
deadly worry.
Clare, by the way, has the third highest number of acres under plantation.
Yes, that's right.
It's the third most planted county in the country, seemingly. But the farmers are waiting for the package to arrive, but it hasn't arrived. I think it was announced in the budget, but nothing has come yet.
Yeah.
But I think you'd be really disgusted if you planted ash and then saw it die, number one. And then you can't do anything with the land until the compensation is sorted out.
Yeah. And how did it get in, if not on the back of another plant?
It got in an imported ash. I mean, this was the scandal altogether.
Yeah. Mm. Settled in Leitrim. Ash that was planted in Leitrim.
Which isn't too far from
us.
It came in on imported ash. I can't understand why we had to import ash trees, of all things, which seed by themselves.
Yeah.
But it is our globalised economy.
I know, but
why aren't we growing them ourselves, is the point. But I've lost the train of thought now, Jim.
Yeah, not to worry. You've lost us all, David. Yeah.
If a farmer is clearing his club, he asked, is there an obligation to replant that land? He asked the IFA to get legal advice on what is a commercial forest. There isn't a person from Dublin, Fort Clonakilty, who would say leaving the ash the way it is for the last 4 years is right, he said. We have two ministers who are judging every day. IFA President Francis O'Gorman said they were told by the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar and Minister McConnell that the ash dieback report is with the Department of Public Expenditure and they expect a compensation package for farmers sooner than later. They didn't give us a timeline of dates. It's not 6 months down the road. It's almost done and dusted. This doesn't deal with the roadside issue. I see it on my own land. We have lots of ash trees along by the road and down through the fields, he said. You can see the boughs blowing off during the storm.
Yeah, so they're the ordinary wild ash trees, I suppose he's talking about along by the road. Oh, sure, I have them myself. You do have to cut them if they're going to be a danger on the road yourself.
Yeah, I don't think you need a license.
No, you wouldn't need a license for that.
Okay, John, you mentioned Kilrush there during the break as well. We were talking, and Kilrush is getting a little bonus treatment.
Well, it does look like it at long last, and it'll be a great source of encouragement to them. You know, it has basically a lovely layout, hasn't it? Wide square and...
Yeah, props wide streets, big streets, square,
yeah.
So, and the estuary.
Yeah, so the article refers to the possibility of the regeneration of the square, which is kind of sounds a bit like Scarif, isn't it, in a way? Yeah. So all I can say is wish them well.
Yes,
for
absolutely.
This renaissance.
I suppose the Green Party will take over there as well, and they'll cut down the square into one lane of traffic.
Yeah.
And there's a lovely picture of St. Sennan's Church in Kilrush on page 10, which is one of the largest churches in County Clare, if I know my churches correctly. I was in it once for Micheál O'Sullivan's funeral. He held it there because he knew he'd have a big funeral, And he got a good send-off there as well. Beautiful picture. And there is a little piece there about St. Sennan.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Well, do you remember Michal O'Sullivan, Jim?
Yes, I remember him coming to these parts.
Do you remember the concert in the Community College Hall?
No, I didn't go to that. No, I was at one in Mount Shannon.
An aside, since you mentioned it, it came up to my mind. He was quite friendly with Johnny, okay, Johnny O'Brien. Mm. And through that contact, he said he'd be delighted to do a concert to raise a few bob for whatever it is we were raising it for. And he did, and it was, only difficulty was it needed a grand piano. I'll never forget the perspiration flowing down as we moved the grand piano, which had come up from Limerick, professionally handled to a certain degree. And we were left with putting it down on the floor in the hall. Again, it had been up on the stage as Michael gave
his performance.
Oh, a fabulous night. But so when people mention Michal O'Sullivan, I always think, sweet God, it was a great concert. You know? But I would not like to be responsible again.
There was a lot of huffing and puffing.
There certainly was. He was a great, great,
he was a great musician. Yeah.
International Women's Day on the 8th of March, June.
Yes.
The speech of St. Sinan as well, which is the St. Sinan's Church in
Kilkenny. That's the connection. Yeah.
And looking, okay, I was just looking here on the front of the Clare Echo, and there's a picture there of a very nice girl, Dr. Ivana McMahon, and apparently she's Miss Ireland.
Oh, that's mine. She is tomorrow and Sunday will determine whether she is going to be as well as the most talented in the world.
And that's taking place in India.
In New Delhi.
Yes.
Yeah, she's a very talented. She does.
Do you know her?
She's a musician as well. I don't know.
Well, I'm surprised. You
Okay, now there's also in the...
If I was in my 20s, John, I'd probably know.
In the Clare Echo, there's a feature on inspiring ladies celebrate International Women's Day, and there are multiple pages highlighting various companies and groups that are headed up by women and the way they are so successful. There's about 9 or 10 of them there. I mean, just looking at, I suppose, near to us, you have Mary Considine, the CEO of Shannon Airport, whom we had on last week. But you've various people, various women, and fair play to them. You know, indeed, they're very successful, and they're being highlighted on the Clare Echo, I suppose, to coincide with International Women's Day and Mother's Day today.
Yeah. Of course, the Clare Echo, you can't get anything free into the Clare Echo, really, because there's an ad for the women's businesses underneath it as well. So yeah, it's a quid pro quo, I think.
It is indeed, yeah. But I suppose
But that's how the Clare Echo finances itself, you see. So
And also, I know it is on Sunday, but on Friday night, International Women's Day, there's a concert, a choral concert in Kilbane Church.
That's right.
Which was, you heard the Gunas choir, and they're all there, all the ladies.
That's tonight, isn't it?
It's on tonight, as we record. On Friday night.
Yeah. Jim, here's a headline for you. Dog SWAT team needed to clamp down on disgusting behaviour on Clare beaches. What do you make of that?
Yes, Clare beaches.
Yeah, a dog SWAT team, if you don't mind. This is page 20 of the Clare Echo.
Yes.
Corrig McMahon has the story. One fine has been issued in Lahinch Beach over the last 3 years for dog fouling, with local politicians insisting members of the public need to be fined in Northwest Clare to change behaviour over the disgusting amount of dog poo left along beaches and public areas. What do you make of that?
I suppose none of us would like to think we're swimming in dog poo or even walking in dog poo.
Never mind to say drinking water that has been contaminated by it.
By it. So,
Are you surprised that only one fine has been issued in the last 3 years?
Yes, I suppose. One would think that there are more dog fouling incidents than one in the last 3 years.
Well, sure, I suppose our friend Frankie Coote is the dog warden, and he can't stand Mervyn Lynch every day.
But isn't that not the problem, Pat, that we have only one dog warden for the entire county? Surely we need about 10 dog wardens.
But I suppose we need education as well.
He has staff. He has staff with him inside Ninas now in the dog pound.
We need to impress on people. Like, all of us go to the beach from time to time, and our families, they play in the sand, they swim in the water, or whatever kind of activity we get up to.
Are you a dog owner?
I am indeed
a
dog owner.
You are, and David is a dog owner.
I am, John, yeah.
And there are three dog owners here. Yeah. You're informed. What I would call, and knowledgeable on the canine practices.
Yeah. Well, when you go out with your dog, you have to bring a plastic bag with you.
So that's what I see David carrying when he's on the Toon Grainy trek.
You do indeed. And you would certainly do if you're on a beach, I will tell you. But, but you have to act, the dog warden or the community officer, or whoever they are, community warden, they have to be watching the dog doing the business. You can't accuse them later of it.
And so, then observing the owner not picking
it
up.
Yes, exactly. So we appeal to dog owners, as we have done in the past. It's not your dog's fault that he has done the business. It's you're not doing your business.
Yes.
My sister...
We are going to run out of time.
My sister lives across the road from me. And when I let out my dog in the morning, he goes off to hug out.
Jim.
Yes,
I opened the champion at the Shannon Town pages, and there are two things that caught my eye. Air taxis on the way for Shannon. I actually remember about 2 years ago. We talked about that.
We did.
But it's alive again. It appears that the possibility of connecting Adair in the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
Okay. The possibility of using a taxi service from an air taxi service from Shannon. Very interesting.
How much would it cost?
These would be small planes, presumably.
Or helicopters.
Yeah.
Small planes as well.
Small planes.
Yeah.
How much is it going to cost, John?
It's only in the embryonic stage.
Yeah.
But there's a second photograph there by John, by my namesake John Kelly, and it's got to do with that tragic accident last fortnight ago, you know, the boy that was knocked down in Shannon.
Yeah.
And there's a traffic calmer in the photograph on page 17, and it's full of floral tributes to the little boy.
Yes.
Tell me, does anybody know whether it's the traffic calmer caught the car?
I don't know.
Do you know the kind of...
I know that road extremely well because...
Do you know the calmers I'm talking about?
Yeah, my sister-in-law, John, lives just adjacent to that road. So we travel that road very, very often.
How safe do you think those calmers are?
Well, the calmers are, there's these kind of protruding...
Yes, concrete.
Concrete areas on both sides.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, it means you kind of have to go in and out through them.
Yes.
But it does allow traffic to park.
Yeah.
But I'm...
Should they be painted?
Yeah, I suppose they should. They should, certainly.
No?
Frost.
Danger. Mm. Yeah.
That frost is a danger and...
Anyway, listen, they just caught my eye.
We must go to East Clare because, Pat, just, I suppose, two things, Pat. You were at the book festival last week, but there's a lovely picture on page 5 of the living section of...
Eddie Lenehan.
Oh, yeah. Just a fantastic photograph.
It's a great photo. I think that'll be in the running for one of those competitions that John Kelly always wins.
Yes.
Because you can easily imagine any Eddie Lenihan in the middle of a story.
Absolutely.
And about to come to the crux of it.
Yeah. Well, it's a fabulous photo. It doesn't say John Kelly at the bottom.
Oh, does it not? No, surely would be
it
him.
Must be John Kelly, because it's a fabulous photograph.
It looks like one of his.
Yes, in a couple of things, I suppose, just we were talking about people who passed away. There's Dylan... Cody Coleman in Shannon. Frank Custy, another man who was
great musician,
musician,
former
teacher,
county
medal winner back in the early 60s.
Was one,
Jerry McNamara.
From Cushing.
And Michael O'Connor had a lovely piece about him. Yeah. And also the Sean Kelleher. From Broadford.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and quite a number of people, you know, well-known people who passed away. Yeah. So we offer our sincere sympathies to all their families.
Yeah.
Now, very quickly, Kilkishan houses, Pat, that's not a good story for you.
Yeah, there was a development of 61 houses applied for permission from Sandford Properties. In Kilkishan, it was a site that was developed during the Celtic Tiger, and it was when the Celtic Tiger died, the houses died as well, and the houses weren't built. So a company went back in and was bought this site, and Sandford Properties Limited, and it was zoned, purchased the site, the zoned site in 2018. Permission has been previously been granted for 76 dwellings on the site in June 07.
Which was just when the bust happened, wasn't it?
The previous owners started development and had partially constructed two dwellings at the site entrance. Subsequently, the economic downturn halted for development. The company began discussions with council planners in 2020 with a view of progressing a proposal for residential development at the site, the planning stage.
But it's the same old story, Pat, because the council turned them down because Ishka Aaron indicated that a wastewater connection couldn't be facilitated.
Well, the wastewater facility in Kilkishan and the main drainage for it was installed in 1999, which is only 21 or 20
But this only seemed to come up at the last minute.
So that. Now, there have been people turned down for outside of the village in Kilkishan for houses, how to build houses, principally because there was a development. They were told by the council that this development in Kilkishan was going ahead.
Yes.
Now, this is turned down. This has been turned down. But I can't understand. Like, Kilkishan is 20 minutes from Shannon, 25 minutes maybe from Innes, 25 minutes from Limerick, half an hour at the most. And when they were putting in this wastewater treatment plant, as Luke says again, why wasn't our planning put in for extra houses? Like, if you put in a wastewater treatment plant into any village, well, you have to put in to that.
Well, you don't just put in for today.
For today.
There's a lovely
heading on one of the, it's on the sports page of the Champion. We're playing Kilkenny, is that right? The
Cats. We're playing Kilkenny today.
And the writer thought it appropriate to suggest that we need to be purring. But I would have a different one. I would say hissing.
Yes. Well, I'd say nobody would accuse Brian Lohan of purring, ever.
No.
Listen, two things. We're nearly out of time. Caoimhe all set for small screen debut on Real Deal this Sunday. And Unreal Deal is broadcast on T.G. Cahir, and the Caoimhe in question is from Williamstown in East Clare, and pictured there of herself and a girl called Heidi on the Real Deal. So,
what page is that on, Jim?
It's on page 2 of the Living section in the Clare Champion. But we wish Caoimhe and Heidi and everybody concerned every success. And in the 1 minute we have, active retirement. There was a meeting during the week and it's covered in a photograph by John Kelly in Killaloo for a Killaloo Ballina active retirement committee that they're trying to set up to introduce an active retirement group.
We keep an eye on that now.
We will keep an eye on that, and there's a photograph there in the Clare Champion with our own Patricia Ann. It's on page 15, I think, and our own Patricia Ann Moore is doing it. Okay, listen, we've reached the end for this evening. Many thanks to everybody. John S., thank you very much.
You're welcome, Jim.
And Pat.
Thanks, Jim.
And David.
Thank you, Jim.
And to Luke for engineering. Pat, have you a song to play us out with?
I have, and just supposed to remind listeners that there's a lot more stories than we discuss every week.
We only get to a few.
People should go out and maybe buy the paper.
Do encourage that.
And judge for themselves.
Yeah, because we do encourage that, because, I mean, if the papers, you know, if they weren't to survive, we would miss them terribly.
And we can't cover every story in an hour of the programme. So people really encourage people to go out and buy the paper and decide on themselves what they want. We have Harry Belafonte to finish off, Jim, with Island in the Sun.
Okay. Island in the Sun. The late Island. Harry Belafonte. Okay. That's great, Pat. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again, with the help of God, next Sunday at 2 o'clock. So from us for now, goodbye and God bless.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me. O, island in the sun.